Hi, welcome to Local Matters. This is Jeremy Wendt. I'm going to be your host today. We're talking education with Dr. Martha Howard from Tennessee Tech University. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate you being here. So we'll jump in. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, where you are, how you got there.
Okay, so I am faculty at Tennessee Tech, professor of early childhood special education. My career started a while ago, so 27 years in early childhood. I was actually in college to be a radio announcer and got a part-time job.
You've come full circle.
I have. I've come full circle, yeah. So I was a communications major, got a part-time gig, and also with my radio job, doing some childcare on the side, and to supplement my radio income, sorry. And I ended up really, really loving working with young children and quit the radio work and started doing that full time and changed my major in college to early childhood. And that's how I got where I am today.
And people may not realize that there is a major for early childhood. It depends on, because everybody knows, very familiar with elementary education or high school math teachers. But sometimes I think people kind of forget that there is a specialization. There's so much to learn.
Absolutely.
With early childhood.
Yeah. And it's birth to age 8 is the early childhood age range. So itty bitty babies all the way up to third grade. So, yeah, there's a specialization and licensure for that. We even have now a birth to K license. So people can come in and specialize in working with little bitty babies and toddlers and preschoolers. So, yeah, it's an exciting field.
It is a lot of fun. I'm going to ask you a few more questions about that. But before we get there, my favorite question, who is your favorite teacher growing up? I know that you're from around here, so somebody could be listening if you choose the right teacher.
Yeah, so I was actually raised most of my early childhood in Nashville. We moved to Sparta, White County, when I was 8 and started school at Doyle Elementary. And then my parents bought a Radio Shack franchise. Remember Radio Shack? Yeah.
Yes.
So Radio Shack and opened the first Radio Shack store in White County. And so we were driving from our rural house out in the country to Sparta town, the big city. Mm-hmm. And when we moved to Sparta to open the Radio Shack store, I moved from Doyle Elementary to East Sparta. And we have a very diverse family. And it was a school that had a lot of diversity, so we fit really perfectly there. And that's where I met my favorite teacher, Dawn Gallagher. She was my fourth grade teacher. And she was kind and nurturing. And I can still remember her writing on the chalkboard with the chalk. And she had one of those cool silver chalk holders. Of course, we don't have chalkboards anymore. I'm showing my age. But when she would run out of chalk, she would hit the, eject button on the chalk and it would fall out and she put the new piece of chalk in. And that was the coolest thing. But of course, not so cool now. But she was the sweetest, kindest, most nurturing, believed in every kid to be able to do whatever they had their mind set on. And full circle moment with that. One of the first fellas that employed me in radio was Bob Gallagher, her husband. So, a full circle moment for me.
Yeah. And so much fun. That's my go-to question for everybody that I have a conversation with, because everybody has that influence. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times we forget to celebrate, forget to reach out, forget to send a card. Here we are showing mm-hmm. our age, write a letter.
Yeah.
To those teachers that had such an impact.
Yeah.
So I would encourage anybody who is listening, as you hear us talk through and hear us talk about those favorite teachers, to think about that and to reach out to that teacher.
Yeah, now you can send them an email.
You can, or a text message.
Yeah, exactly.
Depending on that teacher.
Yeah, and I still remember the principal of that school, too, which is interesting. But David McCulley was principal at East Sparta School, which has since been torn down. Now Woodland Park is serving that population of the people in town. But he was a fantastic administrator. He was in the classroom with the teachers, supporting them, asking them what they needed, was very visible to the kids. And it was a fantastic place.
It's a great place to be. Well, well, I've learned, if nothing else today, I've learned that there was a Radio Shack in Sparta. That's a big deal.
It was.
There's no Radio Shack anywhere around here.
I know.
I know of. So, okay. So let's talk a little bit more about early childhood. So what's the state of early childhood these days? What does that look like? Do we have plenty of teachers in early childhood? Do we need teachers? What does it look like today?
Yeah. So there are two different sort of tracks for early childhood, I would call it. One is licensed programs that are licensed with the Department of Human Services. And then there's the pre-K classroom that are licensed by the Department of Education, starting at about three years of age. Right now in private child care, which would be licensed by the Department of Human Services, there is a child care desert. So COVID actually hit early childhood programs pretty hard. When COVID hit, lots of families pulled their children back home because they were working from home, and lots of programs closed. So in Tennessee right now, there is an initiative to try to get more child care programs, more licensed child care programs that serve families with children birth to age 5 who are working outside the home and need that care. So the Tennessee Early Childhood Training Alliance, TECTA, has an initiative right now to try to build some family child care homes. So maybe moms who are working at home have a few children of their own who could care for other children and be licensed as a family child care home. So that's a big initiative right now to try to get some grassroots movement for early childhood programs to open up, more so than maybe big centers, but just because of the cost associated with that. But family child care homes can be really lucrative, serving their community, and get some finance help to do that through the Tennessee Early Childhood Training Alliance. So that's a big initiative right now to try to solve the child care desert problem.
Mm-hmm. And it is a problem. Anyone with small children or small grandchildren knows the difficulty of finding good child care.
Yeah, and that's the other big initiative is the quality, to make sure that all of the programs that are functioning are of high quality, building those nurturing, meaningful relationships with young children, not just having the doors open, but actually providing the really good quality care. Mm-hmm. So one of the agencies that helps with that in our state is the Child Care Resource and Referral Agency, CCRNR is what we call it. But they actually come into all sorts of different programs and provide that support for the child care professional to help them be able to serve them, all the children and families, in a way that is high quality. So lots of good partnerships happening in our state to try to get that fixed.
Mm-hmm. And always lots of acronyms.
Of acronyms.
Yeah, so always know that when we're in local matters, we're talking education, to get a pen and a piece of paper and write down the acronyms so that if you have questions afterward, you can look them up.
That'll be a game you can play.
We love acronyms. So it's not as simple as I've got a few children and my neighbors have some kids and they want to pay me and I'm just gonna let them come over and throw them in the backyard all day. It's not quite that simple.
Well, I hope not. You could do that, but I wouldn't recommend that any parent
wouldn't be
do
ideal.
That. Right. So I think right now, if you have 7 or more children that you're serving in your child care home, that you need a license. And I would recommend that any family seek out licensed child care. Just because there is a standard of care, there's a somebody who's coming in and checking to make sure that the children are cared for well and meeting that certain license standard, which is you want that basic standard of care if you're paying someone to take care of your child. So I think that would be certainly recommended that you seek out a licensed program. And we do have the Tennessee state website has a list of all the licensed child care. If you just put in licensed child care into the search engine in Tennessee, then you would be able to pull up licensed child care agencies and actually see how they are doing with quality. So there's a quality standard that we have to meet too. But if you are exceeding that quality standard, you get you can tell if somebody's exceeding those, and that's what you want to see.
So how does that look different at a home small daycare with 10 kids versus a larger place in town? So I know you work with the Child Development Lab at Tennessee Tech. How do those two places differ on paper?
So the licensing standards are linked to the type of program. So family child care would have different standards that they have to meet than a center-based program, which is what the child development lab on campus would be considered. So there are different standards, different licensing standards, and a different monitoring process for somebody who's coming in to say, how are you doing, which they do regularly. The Department of Human Services licenses our Tennessee Tech Child Development Lab. So they have a program evaluator who's coming in regularly to make sure that everything's done well and that the quality standards are being met or exceeded. And so the state sets up those criteria in family child care and a group home, which is even higher than a family child care home, and a center-based program are all measured a little bit differently.
And they all fall under that same umbrella. Mm-hmm. Of monitoring,
yep.
just at a slightly different level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important. It's a piece that sometimes you don't think about. If you're a parent and you have that child and it's, you know, you need child care, you just start out looking. You know, you don't even realize the different levels and the different layers and the different expenses. I mean, it can be, you know, very wide in terms of expense.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think also the qualifications of the caregiver. So to think about that too,
mm-hmm.
How are they trained? How do they, how are they prepared to mm-hmm. meet the needs of the children?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. We're going to stop for just a minute and take a short break, and then we'll be back to talk a little more with Dr. Martha Howard from Tennessee Tech University. Welcome back to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, talking to Martha Howard, Dr. Howard from Tennessee Tech University, about early childhood education. So, circling back around with early childhood education, where are we going? I remember hearing at one point that we were going to have licensed early childhood educators in every pre-K classroom and have pre-K classes, you know, 3-year-olds through school age at every school in the state of Tennessee, and, you know, some interesting things that cost a lot of money, but so where are we going with that? If I'm a parent and I've got a new baby and I think, man, that would be great to have that school system option when they turn 4. Where's the state of events and politically, where is that going, do you think?
I think there's still a big initiative to make sure that we have services for kids 3 to 5 in the school system. I think that there's even more of a push for having inclusive settings in the school system, so allowing for peer models to be in classrooms with children with special needs so that there's that support and mentorship within the classroom, that classroom community. So I think what we're hearing at the legislative level is that continuing to grow and hopefully in all counties having that 3 to 5-year-old classroom available to families with obviously, I think the state is really wanting to have all of the classrooms be a place where all children are welcome. So that inclusive setting for all children.
How do we get there as a state? Because, you know, yeah. Obviously we have to have qualified people to teach those mm-hmm. kids. And that's a whole different conversation with teacher shortages right
True.
Now. But then we need space, you know, we need funding. And I know that Putnam County is looking to repurpose one of their buildings that they had. So I know that Parkview, the intention is for the old Parkview building to be renovated and become a pre-K mm-hmm. center. Do you think that's a good model that Putnam County's kind of moving towards? Or is there something better? How do we bring all those pieces together to really serve a district or a community?
You know, I've been thinking about that recently with that shift to putting all the pre-K classrooms all in one school. I think there are pros and cons to that. I think it could be good to have that collaboration in that space with all the teachers with the same train of thought and all the families can work together. I also think it's good to have kids in a class in a spot where they can see, you know, moving through the school system as they grow. And having the ability to have all of the different resources, RTI and special education and all those things available, speech therapy, occupational therapy, all the things a child might need that are located at another school. So I can see both sides of it, I think, and perhaps that's the plan already, and I just don't know it. So I try not to overthink it, but I think pre-K and the Department of Education licensing those programs has a lot of hope moving forward, a lot of things that are happening moving forward. I think for rural areas, space is hard. So the schools are already small. They're already stretched. What I've seen in a lot of those areas is, portable buildings for pre-K. So they're bringing the space to the school and having a portable building that can serve and still be accessible. Of course, there are pros and cons to that, too, because they're separate and sometimes they don't get the support they need because they're on the campus, but they're not being supported logistically by what's happening there on the campus. It's sort of, oh, they're out there. So they'll come in occasionally, but they don't necessarily have all the support they need. I guess the training and making sure teachers are appropriately trained is really the area of need right now, to make sure that we have the teachers and that they actually are skilled in that area. I think at Tennessee Tech, we have a great group of students coming forward to do that work. We've got a large group of early childhood majors right now, and there's a stellar group. So I think at Tennessee Tech, we're doing a great job of providing the people to do the work, but we could still add more because of retirements and people that are moving to another state or, whatever. When the need's there, I hope we're able to meet that need. I think it's complicated.
This is for sure.
Yeah.
Well, training. So you mentioned training. So I have three children. I think I did pretty well. But, when you have a four-year-old, there's not much to know, right? You just keep them entertained. And so what kind of – and I know that's not true – What is the training? What does that look like for an early childhood educator? What are the topics, the things that you teach them that make them professionals?
Yeah. So I've always said, I love the idea of having pre-K, but development doesn't start at four. It starts before the baby's even born. The prenatal care that families get, the all of the things that the baby hears and feels and experiences while they're in the womb, that matters. Brain development happens so quickly starting at birth. I mean, you've seen it. You've had your own kids. So they're babies, and then a year later they're walking and they're saying words, and it happens so fast. And if we can, as professionals, provide the high-quality nurturing, meeting the child's needs when they need it, helping the family understand the importance of all those things, that's going to make a huge difference in how they even approach learning at four. So, we think about the birth to three period as being the real ideal time to get in there and be able to make sure that they have trust and they have good social emotional skills so that they're able to manage their own behavior, that they can, have all of those skills so that when they get to preschool at four, that they're able to sit in circle time and they're able to listen and they're able to start engaging with other kids and start writing, making those first little letters on paper. If they can't get along with their friends, if they aren't able to manage their behavior, they're not going to be able to learn. And so we feel like it's our task really in those first years to be able to build that skill with the kids. And we have to train our teachers to be able to do that. And those are big things, to be able to nurture a child appropriately, to be able to talk to them respectfully, to be able to provide them with play-based, developmentally appropriate experiences so they can be successful later. And that's what we do in our program at Tennessee Tech. And I think that that provides that trajectory that children can really be successful.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a huge deal. I mean, all of the research and the time and the development and just understanding all of that. I think sometimes people outside of the profession miss that they don't understand the depth of knowledge and the expertise that comes with those early childhood professionals.
Yeah, it's really laying the foundation for the future. If you have a rocky early childhood experience, that's not preparing you for what's coming. And we know so much now about adverse childhood experiences and the impact that all that makes on a child's future, that if we can, you know, we can't always stop all those things from happening, but we can provide the positive framework and the love and the nurturing and the experiences that can negate some of that and allow for a child to be successful. And that's what we shoot for.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that. It's good information. And we're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit about some of your grant programs. Welcome back to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, here talking about early childhood education with Dr. Martha Howard from Tennessee Tech University. So I know, Dr. Howard, that you have some of the largest grants that we have ever seen on Tennessee Tech's campus, and those are based around early childhood, and we told the listeners to get a pen out. We've got more acronyms coming.
Lots more.
So tell me about some of those grants, what they look like. I know they're large. I know that you have people in homes. Explain some of those. I know there's a couple different ones.
Yeah. So in partnership with Tennessee's Early Intervention System, also known as TEIS, write that one down. They are federally and state funded through the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act,
IDEA.
Good. to serve children birth to three in states. So Tennessee has adopted that law as part of what they want to voluntarily contribute to our state. So birth to age three, they provide early intervention services. So children who have any kind of need, such as developmental delay, speech need, if they were born prematurely, if they have a diagnosis such as Down syndrome or autism, and there's a whole list of diagnoses that can qualify to get services. But we provide, with the programs that we have at Tennessee Tech, we'll start with Milestones, although it's the newest of the two, but it makes the most sense to start there. So Milestones provides the eligibility evaluations for Tennessee's early intervention system. So when TEIS gets a referral for a child birth to three who has any kind of concern developmentally, and it can be anything, and the family can make the referral. It doesn't have to come from a doctor. Anybody can make a referral. Our Milestones evaluators go out to the family's home. They do a comprehensive evaluation. It's the Battelle Developmental Inventory, third edition, otherwise known as the BDI.
Okay.
So we go and do that evaluation. And if a child has a delay, a 40% delay in one domain of development, and we test all five: communication, cognitive, social, emotional, physical, and adaptive self-help. So when we go do that evaluation, if they have a 40% delay in one of those domains or 25% delay in two, they are eligible for services through TEIS. So they don't have to have an official diagnosis, but if they're struggling in any area developmentally, they can get services through TEIS at no cost to the family. So that's one thing that people don't know about TEIS services. They are a payer of last resort. So they can bill insurance, and then if insurance doesn't pick up for speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, any of that, behavioral therapy, then TEIS picks up payment. So there's no cost for families for the evaluation or anything else. So our evaluators go do that evaluation. We send it into TEIS. They evaluate it to see if the children are eligible. So that's not our job. We just do the evaluation, gather the medical releases, and do all that beginning stuff and lay the foundation for TEIS. We're the first face, really, of TEIS. Then if the child's eligible, TEIS writes an Individualized Family Service Plan, the IFSP. And then they get services. So my next program, Bridges, provides the developmental therapy. There are lots of agencies all across the state that provide the developmental therapy. There's actually another in Cookeville called Kids Putnam. So if the child's eligible and they live in a county that we serve eight Upper Cumberland counties, then our Bridges developmental therapist will come to the home once a week and work with the child and family for an hour, giving them guidance on how to increase their child's developmental need. So whatever they're struggling with, if it be speech, if it be crawling, walking, pulling up, eating, any of those things, our developmental therapists are specially trained to help the family learn how to help their child during that magic time when we're not there. So we give them ideas on how to enhance their development. We give them tasks to do throughout the week through their daily routines. And then we come back the next week, check in on how things went, and then give them more tasks to do. And so we're helping them enhance their child's development. So those are That's the short of it. There's a lot more I could say, but those are the two grants that we have at Tennessee Tech that serve children who are in early intervention.
So for a parent who doesn't know anything about this, mm-hmm. or a grandparent, so let's say you're a grandparent and you've noticed that you're the two-year-old, you really feel like something that's just not right with the speech. Like you feel like they should be talking more. Where do you start? You know, because sometimes you worry about calling in and having people come in the home and help you. But obviously the service is there for people to take advantage of.
Right.
And you want people to take advantage, to have that help and have you connect them to services. What would you say to that parent? Where do they start? You know, how do they know if they should start?
So I would say at some point with all of us, if we've seen children or we're interacting with children or we've had our own and we think, you know, I just saw a child a couple of days ago and they're the same age and they were already doing that. That little whisper is the time to make the referral. Go to Google, pull up the website, type in TEIS referral form. There's an online referral. You type in the child's information, hit submit. The next day, an evaluator will call you. The very next day, you'll get a call from an evaluator who says, hey, when can I come out to your home? Are you interested? There's no harm in having the evaluation. One of two things will happen. You'll know the child is fine and they don't need any services, or help is on the way. So either way, it can't hurt to have the evaluation. And it's at no cost to families. That's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm. So those services, so let's say once again, so we call and we have that service. They're helping the child with speech therapy. And so now child's turning six, turning five, getting ready for kindergarten, and they make that transition to the school system. Do you all just pass the child off?
Okay, so this is a really good question.
Like?
So we last October, we used to serve kids birth to age three. So what happens now when the child turns three, well, two and a half, we start the transition meeting at two and a half. So we'll start the transition. They'll have a transition meeting at three to determine if they're eligible for school system services. That's a different process, but the school system will do their evaluation. Now, if the child is eligible at three for school system services, they can choose to stay with TEIS until they're five. So there's no longer a gap in service, or they can go to the school system and have services there. The difference is that at three, if you transition to school system services, those services are no longer in your home. So for lots of families, especially if they're living in rural areas, they would have to travel to a school locally to get their services there, such as speech therapy or occupational therapy or whatever. And developmental therapy would no longer be an option because they don't do that in the school system. But if the family chooses, and it's a choice, to stay with TEIS, they can still get developmental therapy and those other services that they might have, and continue until they're five. So that's a wonderful thing that just actually changed last October.
And it makes sense, that transition. It was a loaded question. I was hoping you'd explain that process. Turning just a little bit of a different direction, I know that one of our real popular programs at Tennessee Tech is applied behavior analysis. And I know that those workers also evaluate. They go into the homes. Can you explain just a little bit of a difference between those two programs?
So there doesn't necessarily have to be a difference. TEIS has vendors who work for them who provide those services. So if a child needs applied behavior analysis and an agency locally does that service, they can be a vendor with TEIS, and the family can, that can be written on the child's IFSP, and they get that service through that agency. So that's another thing that TEIS actually needs right now, is more vendors. So if you provide speech therapy, occupational therapy, feeding therapy, behavior therapy, you can be a vendor through TEIS. You just go to their website and you can apply to do that too. So they need more vendors to actually provide those services to families.
And certainly a growing field.
Absolutely. Also. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I know that we have students at Tennessee Tech who come into the university with a typical licensure program. I'm going to teach kindergartners. I'm going to get that license. But we also have programs where we have students who don't follow that traditional pathway. They may end up working with TEIS with their early intervention services or in the applied behavior analysis field. So what does that pathway look like? Let's say I'm a 16-year-old, happen to be listening to the radio, and what you're saying sounds interesting. You know, I have a passion for working one-on-one with students. I would love to help 3-year-olds in the home with speech therapy or, you know, some service or helping them connect with services. What does that pathway look like?
This is one thing I'm very passionate about. I'm glad you asked the question. So I think it was like 5 years ago. Might have been longer. We decided that at Tennessee Tech, we had a group of students who would, you know, they wanted to be in early childhood, but they would get into practicums and they would say, you know what, I want to do this. I want to work with young children, but I don't want to do it in a classroom. And so we would start having conversations with students about that need and started an early childhood practitioner program. So now we have a pathway for licensure students and a pathway for students who don't want to teach in the classroom, but they want to work with young children and families. So we train them specifically to work in early intervention. We train them to own their own program, their own childcare program. We make sure that they have the foundation that the licensure students have, but then they take a track a little separate where they actually do an internship. They can choose to do that in early intervention. They can choose it to do it with the Department of Human Services and learn how to evaluate programs. There are all sorts of different options for them. But early childhood is such a broad, vast area. There's so many needs for children and families. So for us to be able to tailor a program to meet the variety of needs that a family might have outside of the early childhood classroom is filling a need that I think our community's needed for a really long time. Because those fields also need to have a degree. So you can't get into those fields without having that open door of the degree, but they need the specialized training if they're going to be doing that instead of focusing so much on the classroom when there's so many needs outside of that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. There's a huge demand for early childhood professionals outside of the classroom.
Absolutely. And so, both are equally valuable. They're both equally valued, equally meaningful. And to make sure that we're making that clear, that all of this is important and necessary in our world. So,
yeah. All right. Well, thank you for your time today.
Appreciate it. It was a pleasure.
Again, this is Local Matters with Dr. Martha Howard. I'm Jeremy Wendt, your host, and we'll see you again soon. Thank you.